Hot Radio Network is pleased to present Encounter, a public service program here on KSIV that spotlights local Christian events and provides information and resources to enrich your lives. And now, your Encounter host, Judy Redlick.
Who are the winners and the losers of the one big beautiful bill? Are you confused because there's so much in it? Well, as my guest, I have Richard Harris, and he is the executive director of Truth and Liberty and the host of Truth and Liberty Show and the founder of Richard Harris Ministries. And so he teaches the Word of God. He tries to come from a Christian perspective, and we need that because of all the other media influences we get. So, Richard, welcome. Tell us a little bit about your background so that folks have an idea of how you can come to say what you're saying.
Sure, Judy. Well, I'm a lawyer by professional training, really before the Lord called me to ministry. So I had practiced law for 21 years and then basically was led to go to Andrew Womack's Bible College in Colorado 13 years ago. And I did that. My wife and our kids, we came out here to Colorado and did that. And it was just fantastic experience. Because I'd had some background and knowledge in government, I was asked by Andrew to start a government school in the Bible College in the third year of the school where they do vocational training. And then after that was asked to be the executive director of Truth and Liberty, which is the cultural and political outreach arm of his ministry. So we are trying to bring, and we are bringing, a biblical and Christian perspective to the news and events and issues of our day and equipping Christians to stand for truth in the public square.
So let's talk about the one big, beautiful bill. What it does and who wins, who loses, we're all confused. Can you straighten us out?
Sure, Judy. You know, I believe that the winners really are the American people as a whole. You know, you can start parsing it and saying, oh, this industry, this interest group and so forth wins and loses. But really and truly, it's the nation as a whole that benefits because this bill, although it's not perfect by any stretch, and it, in my opinion, does not go nearly far enough in cutting spending, it does move that direction in a net effect. So I believe that the best estimates are that if Congress doesn't increase spending after this, you know, beyond inflation and holds the line, then it will result in a net reduction in 10 years of deficit spending, probably cumulative in the neighborhood of $4 to $8 trillion. So, and one thing people have to remember when we're talking about these figures in the one big beautiful bill is they're all 10-year figures. It's like cumulative. So the Congressional Budget Office says, oh, it's going to increase the deficit by $2.4 trillion. Well, that's over 10 years. And so that would be $240 billion per year is their estimate. I think the CBO is wrong for multiple reasons, but I think the real winners are the American people because this is going to, it's going the right direction at least of curtailing spending and increasing revenue without hamstringing the economy.
Well, so you say that some of the losers are AI and tech companies, electric vehicles, solar and wind, shippers and online retails. Food companies, that's a lot of businesses, and you've got universities and hospitals on this whole thing. Why are they the losers in this whole thing?
Well, the main companies on there for you to focus in on are going to be those who are currently benefiting from Biden's Green New Deal and all of the excessive, wasteful government spending that goes to universities that are, that have woke policies. So there are billions and billions of dollars, tax dollars, are given to universities across America as grants for all kinds of crazy programs. Many of them are woke kind of ideology-driven nonsense that we've heard about in the news. And, you know, the Trump administration has, you know, by executive order says, you know, there's not going to be any more DEI in the federal government. And universities, if you're practicing DEI, then you're not going to receive any federal funds. And that's been incorporated into the One Big Beautiful Bill So that is going to be a large savings for the federal government. And also, of course, the universities could be thrown in the category of losers in that sense. I think really that's just the sort of zero sum game look at it. In the long run, it will help them restore, you know, be restored to their proper mission in the first place. So in the long run, they'll be winners too. But, you know, it cuts out all the Green New Deal grants. It also stops Biden's student loan bailout program that was illegal anyway, but it stops that. So those are all savings. And so you can lump up the beneficiaries of that into the quote unquote losers column if you want to do that. You know, the same thing for electric vehicles and the hospitals. That has to do with the cuts in Medicaid, but really and truly it's not. The hospitals, again, you know, they probably won't be treating these folks in the first place now, so they won't be really major net losers on it. But the cuts in Medicaid deserve some comment and exploration, Judy. This is what the Democrats made the major fuss over, and they're
well. That's exactly the next question I was going to ask you. So, yes, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, they've been claiming, oh, millions are going to lose their health care, and you're cutting Medicaid and this sort of thing. It's not actually true. What the One Big Beautiful Bill does with respect to Medicaid is it will require all able-bodied applicants. This is if you're disabled, this doesn't apply to you. I think if you're retirement age and above, it doesn't apply. Of course, you've got Medicare anyway at that age. But able-bodied folks, and it says you need to be working to be eligible for Medicaid. You're not, if you're able to work, you can't just sit at home and then go down to the emergency room and expect taxpayers to pay your medical expenses. We're not going to do that anymore. That is the number one biggest reform in the bill. But it also requires that deceased people be taken off the Medicaid rolls and that we stop sending money to whoever is collecting it on the other end because those checks are being cashed. It's a fraud deal. It also shortens the retroactive period from 90 to 30 days, meaning if I apply for Medicare, I can go back and get Medicaid paid for the past 30 days, but I can no longer go back 90 days. In other words, if you need Medicaid, you need to apply for it sooner and not just sit around and procrastinate. The next thing is that it cancels funding for Planned Parenthood. And this is a massive amount of money. Planned Parenthood gets about $200 million a year from the federal government.
Really?
Supposedly for women's health. Of course, all of those so-called health services they claim to provide can also be obtained at no cost at the thousands of community health centers around America. So Planned Parenthood is not needed. Women are not going to lose their health care because of the cuts to Planned Parenthood. What it does is it's really saying, you know, we don't fund abortion directly. Planned Parenthood is all about abortion, but by paying these so-called health-related things like pap smears and cancer screening and these other things, what we're doing is we're giving revenue to Planned Parenthood that allows them to shift their income over to the abortion side. And so the net effect is still helping the number one abortion provider in America to kill babies. And so that's just a great victory, I think, that's in there. Now, out of the Senate, it only lasts 1 year. It'll have to be renewed next year, but at least we got a year out of it, and hopefully it can be renewed. The last thing on Medicaid is it shifts much of the administrative burden to the states. Now, that might seem unfair, but the truth is the states already dole out the money. They administer the money, so they ought to be the ones that are administrating it so that if the cost of administration is on the states, then they will have the incentive to do it efficiently. Mm-hmm. You put the cost, you know, where it belongs there. So that's how we get to $1 trillion in savings from Medicaid.
A lot of people are concerned about what's going to happen in the future to Social Security and everybody who's paid into it.
Well, and that's a legitimate concern. I don't know what the projected insolvency date is now, but based on current payout levels and workforce data and stuff like that, they say that Social Security will run out of money, you know, in the future. Now, they've been saying these things, though, for years. You might remember back when George W. Bush was president and he came up with a plan to save Social Security, and it was supposed to be bankrupt in, you know, 10 years. Well, that was 2004, and here we are, you know, 2025, and it's still 10 to 20 years down the road. So I think that the economy is growing faster than they project, and the population has grown more than they projected. So I don't think people ought to be, you know, flippant about the situation with Social Security, but at the same time, it's not a sky is falling situation either.
Richard, who's going to benefit?
Well, the beneficiaries, obviously, as I said, are the American people, but the bill opens up exploration for oil and gas on some federal lands that has to be permitted, of course, but so you might say that oil and gas companies will benefit. It is providing money for the development of infrastructure for AI, and so, you know, Silicon Valley and chip makers and that sort of thing will benefit there. It also, there is a special provision in it, a scholarship fund, which is going to be available for parents to enable them to pay for the expenses of private Christian or homeschooling. So it's like a federal school choice bill almost in a
Wonderful.
Way.
Wonderful. So, because a lot of states can't seem to pass that.
Yeah, isn't that fantastic? So, and, you know, basically the real winners are going to be working Americans because of the tax cuts that are now made permanent, number one. If those had not been made permanent, if the Democrats had their way, our taxes all across the board, Americans' income tax rates would have skyrocketed, and that would have probably sent us into a deep recession. But in addition to just making those permanent, the bill has, there will be no tax on tips. How many single moms do we know out there who are waitresses or college students who are waiters and this kind of thing? There's no tax on overtime now, no income tax. It's increased the personal deduction by $1,000 for every taxpayer. Seniors, now Trump on the campaign trail, you might remember, he promised not to tax Social Security benefits. He wasn't able to do that in this bill because of procedural rules, but what they did do is they created an increased personal deduction of $4,000 for low and moderate income seniors over 65 of $4,000. So that's really significant.
So, Richard, we got to take a break. So will you come back after we take a break and let's unpack some of this stuff? Would you do that?
All right. I'll be right here.
All right. I'm Judy Redlick. This is Encounter. Richard Harris is my guest. We'll be back. You're listening to Encounter. Encounter's on 5 days a week at 2 p.m. on KSIV Radio, 91.5 FM or 95.9 FM, or 1320 AM if you live in the greater St. Louis area. And if you miss the show, you can go to botradionetwork.com. That's B-O-T-T, radionetwork.com. Choose Encounter. Choose the St. Louis page and listen to any of the shows that have been recorded in the past and aired on the radio. I host the Encounter Show, the local Encounter Show, on Tuesdays, and Pastor David Vaughn hosts the local Encounter Show on Thursdays. Listen to us, won't you, sometime? And we love to hear from you. You can email me, jredlich, R-E-D-L-I-C-H, jredlich, at botradionetwork.com. That's botradionetwork.com. And now back to Encounter. Hey, I'm Judy Redlich. We're back with Encounter, winners and losers of the one big beautiful bill. President Trump just signed that bill. So Richard Harris is my guest, executive director of Truth and Liberty and host of the Truth and Liberty Show and the founder of Richard Harris Ministries. So we've been unpacking this in the first segment, but Richard, let's talk about more benefits and taxes.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for your listeners out there, I know this is a lot, but there's a lot in it and a lot of stuff that's going to benefit a lot of people. We were talking about the additional tax benefits or tax savings. I'm not sure if I got it in the last segment or not, but this bill makes, and it's now the law, makes interest payments on new car loans. So if you buy a new American-made car, and it has to be a new car, the interest on the loan is now deductible from your income taxes. So that's a pretty significant deduction for brand new cars. Most brand new cars are, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 now. So, and then also we have something called the SALT deduction, which you may have seen in the news while the debates were going on, and most people probably like, what is that?
Yeah.
So that's, SALT stands for state and local tax, state and local income tax deduction. So what it does is it increases the amount that a person can deduct from their federal income taxes for what they paid in state taxes during the year. So states that have income taxes and so forth, you know, it's, the idea is you shouldn't have to double dip, you know. We're paying enough in federal tax. Why do we have to pay, you know, another 5 to 10 and 12% in places like New Jersey and others in state and local taxation? So it makes that deductible up to $10,000 is, I think, what came out of the Senate. So that can be also significant tax savings for folks. And then the last thing is the child tax credit. It increases the child tax credit to, I believe it's $2,500. So that works a lot like a deduction on your income and is a significant savings for families. And, you know, is another, I don't want to call it a motivator. You don't want to have children to save taxes, but it does free up finances for young families who want to have children. So that's a very positive thing. And so that's kind of the string of tax benefits, the major ones and so forth that folks might want to know about. Well, a couple other things that it does, though, three more things that I haven't mentioned yet, Judy, is number one, it funds the border wall. So finally, Trump's wall is going to be built. Now, you might remember that
in his first term, that was one of his main pushes.
It was, and it was pulling teeth for him to get the funding out of Congress. And by the time he got it and they got started, the 2020 came and he wasn't reelected. And then Joe Biden basically canceled the whole thing. You know, remember they tried to start selling off the parts that had already been bought and paid for.
Right.
Well, it's going to be built now. It's fully funded. So that will play, obviously, a major role in stemming illegal immigration in the country, which in turn will have economic benefits. Let me elaborate on that. Right now in America, we are spending hundreds of millions of dollars on illegal immigrants and benefits all across America, things like unemployment insurance or Medicaid. This bill originally would have banned Medicaid payments for illegal immigrants. The Senate didn't have the stomach to do that, so it, you know, that had to be left in there. But with a border wall and the current ICE enforcement, you know, illegal immigration is down to a trickle now, and the border wall will hopefully keep it that way. And so you'll see a significant savings on the economy and the deficit and stuff like that there. Now, we could go into more detail about that, but I think that's a little bit beyond what we're talking about. The Golden Dome as well. So folks who don't know what that is, that's what Trump is calling the missile defense system that he wants to design and build over the United States. Sort of like what Israel has, except on a much, much larger scale. But the ability to defend the United States against basically intercontinental ballistic missile attacks, and there was initial funding in there for that, not nearly enough to complete it, but at least it got started. And so those are the main provisions in the one big beautiful bill.
So how fluid is this big beautiful bill? Trump leaves office in 4 years and what happens? What do you think is going to happen to it?
Well, it's a great question, Judy, because it is very fluid. You're right. If the Democrats take over Congress and they win the presidency, they could very easily undo all of this. I say very easily. They could undo all of it. Now, the chances of them retaking the Senate in the midterms is probably pretty low, but they have a decent shot at taking the House. And then in 4 years, you know, who knows what's going to happen in 4 years. And so I'm optimistic that we will be seeing major benefits from this before the next presidential election, hopefully before the midterms in 2026, and that the American people will realize that this was actually a good thing. But, yeah, it's a reconciliation bill, and so it can be changed with the next Congress just as quickly as it was done this time. So, yeah, it's not. No, nothing is written in stone in that sense. Now, the tax cuts When they were done in 2017, they were made provisional with a kind of an expiration clause. They've now been made permanent. So Congress would have to actually pass new legislation to raise taxes. And so, you know, they don't really like to do that because of the political repercussions. But so that one might be a little bit tough.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So how can people track this bill now that it's into law?
A good place to track good news or economic news is whitehouse.gov. As the president issues, you know, or his staff, they issue very frequent reports, daily reports really on everything, but you can see them talking about economic numbers periodically there. And so that's a good place for the average person to go to.
Is there anything else, Richard, that we need to know in that last couple of minutes of this program?
Well, Judy, I think it would be helpful if we took just a few minutes and countered the scare tactics coming from the left here, because the way this game is played in Washington is really difficult for the average person to get a hold of. The Democrats have been saying ever since it was proposed that it's going to increase the deficit. And they throw numbers out there anywhere from $2 trillion to $6 trillion. And what they're basing it on is there's an agency called the Congressional Budget Office, CBO, and they're supposed to be nonpartisan. And they rate these spending bills and stuff like this based on the impact on the budget and stuff. And so they came out with a report, and they said this is going to increase the deficit by $2.4 trillion over 10 years. Well, okay, that startled everybody. But once you look at their analysis, you realize that it's all wet, because the first thing they did is they're counting the tax measure as a reduction in revenue. Well, wait a second. Those tax rates have been in place since 2017. So it's really not cutting taxes. It's just making the current rates permanent. And so that's $1.7 trillion that needs to be taken out of that 2.4 right off the bat. The second thing is that they have they make an assumption about economic growth that I think is too low, and most conservatives think it's too low. But they're assuming that the economy is only going to grow at 1.8%. Well, so when the economy grows, of course, tax revenue increases as well, right?
Right.
And so they were saying that it's only going to grow at 1.8%, which would produce a relatively small increase in federal revenue. But the average economic growth over I think Trump's first term was 2.2% per year. And the way things are situated now, and with all of the measures packed in here for tax relief and other things, I think a 3% growth in the economy per year on average is probably reasonable. Now, whether that can hold up over 10 years, you know, again, who knows? But that would produce anywhere from $2.5 to $3.5 trillion in increased revenue for the federal government over 10 years. So you can see all of a sudden that $2.4 trillion projection of increase in the deficit is gone. And then the other thing they don't include is the CBO estimated that Trump's tariffs, they said, well, let's assume 10% tariff rate for all countries across the board going forward. If it settles out at that, it's going to produce $2.8 trillion in revenue. That's not even in their analysis of the One Big Beautiful Bill. And so that's not fair either. So if you add that, all those things together, I think that it's very reasonable to say that the One Big Beautiful Bill will cut the deficit by anywhere from $4 to $6 trillion over 10 years. So I think people should not really give a lot of credit to that CBO estimate or the Democrats who keep talking about it.
Richard, you have one more minute. What would you like to tell the American people?
I'd like to say that this bill is a good step in the right direction, but it doesn't go far enough. The Bible says that the borrower is servant to the lender. We're currently borrowing 8 We're currently borrowing so much money, like $1 to $2 trillion a year. The interest alone on our national debt is $880 billion a year. That's 10 to 12% of the federal budget. We are a servant to the lender. We have mortgaged future generations. So this bill is good, but it doesn't even go near far enough. We have got to, as a country, deal with these entitlement programs and figure out how we're going to cut our spending, because we cannot afford this in the long term. It's got to go even further.
The Big Beautiful Bill. Richard Harrods has been my guest, and Richard serves as the Executive Director of Truth and Liberty and host of the Truth and Liberty Show, founder of Richard Harris Ministries. Richard, what's your website if people would like to learn more?
Thanks, Judy. Yeah, so my ministry website is richardharrisministries.com, and you can find Truth and Liberty at truthandliberty.net. It's all one word, truthandliberty.net.
So those websites again?
richardharrisministries.com, truthandliberty.net.
Whitehouse.gov is the website to go to track what's happening on this big, beautiful bill. Thank you, Richard, for joining us today. On Encounter, I'm Judy Redlick. I know it's a lot, but I hope you've learned something to take back and remember.
This has been Encounter with Judy Redlick, informing listeners on local Christian events and matters that affect your lives. Spread the word and invite people to listen to Encounter on KSIV or online at botradionetwork.com.